This episode of Super Pulp Science is brought to you by ChasingArtwork.com, with new artwork and books updated regularly. Go to ChasingArtwork.com to see more.
Attention, citizens! It's time for Super Pulp Science!
This is Super Pulp Science, where we talk about how genre gets made. I'm here with my producer, Dan Vadeboncour. I'm not leaning close enough to the microphone.
Yeah, I can tell.
Which is his job.
It's your job to lean closer.
To indicate. And Dan, thank you so much for indicating my failures. I am also here with Curry, also known as Chasing Artwork. I am Gregory Kamichek, and we are all creative people who make a living either making audio stuff, making words and pictures, making books. And one of the things we're going to talk about today
is how our studio is a mess.
Oh, our studio is absolutely a mess.
Our studio is so messy, but I like these times. The, like, when the back storage room gets vomited into the main studio and every, like, square foot of floor.
I had to do a little flexing, like, am I ready for a show? I'm going to set up part of it here. Okay. I remember how to do this. Okay. But we don't have a lot of time today. So what I want to do, dear listener, is ambush Justin with something that I think will be of use to you, the listener. Anyone who has been following along on our journey knows that I've recently acquired an agent at Westwood Creative. And they, when you send manuscripts to them, one step that maybe people don't know about that I'm becoming more familiar with now is the editorial letter that comes back to you once you've submitted that manuscript. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a fun game. It has, and my agent, Emmy, is fantastic at giving substantive and qualitative feedback about certain things. I'm not going to go through that feedback, dear listener. Only I know the answers that are here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Justin to fill in what he thinks our book is about or the strengths or weaknesses of the book based on the headings of this document.
Okay.
All right? To think about, because then you, the listener, will know what kind of things are being considered by the agent. You can see someone respond who doesn't know what that answer would be, and to think about it for the first time, because I honestly think that is an important moment.
So before we do this, we should probably give, because this might be somebody's first time listening,
good,
the brief history of Haunted Helpers. So Haunted Helpers was originally... I came up with the idea late one night, just randomly, and just had this strong idea for a kid's book that I just kind of thumbnailed out. And the basic premise was there was a ghost and a skeleton living in the same house, and a kind of like fun Easter egg was maybe they were the same person. They're lonely, they don't have any friends, they're tired of playing checkers with each other, and so... they get the idea that if we clean up this spooky-looking house, if we make it look pretty, maybe a family will move in and then we can have new friends. And then this, like a lot of like rough ideas, these sketches went away somewhere and sat in a portfolio. And then one day at the studio, I came across that portfolio. I was cleaning or doing something and spread it all out on the table. I was like, Greg, look at this awesome book that I don't know if I'm ever going to make. And so Gregory took the pages and then started rhyming.
And I was just riffing, you know. I'm no rap battler, but I was just like, oh, if it was a kid's book, it would be like this. And I started making rhymes about the skeleton and the passage of doom and all of these things that were in the house.
So over like the next 2.5 hours, you basically typed out the entire rough script. But then you had to go home to make supper for your wife and kids and...
aww.
I thought, okay, you have the script done. I bet you I could storyboard out this whole thing by 8:30 when bedtime is, so you can read your kids this book that we basically started and finished in one sitting. And so I storyboarded it out, and your kids liked it.
Yeah, then we went through it that night. I read it at dinner, I think. You got it even sooner than that. Mm. So I read through it. Yeah. Do you forget? My son is here in the studio, one of them. One of them is over there building a Lego stop motion set, but one of them. You forget? It didn't strike your heart? Uh-oh. Emmy, if you're listening, it really will affect kids, just not mine.
Okay, but then the book went kind of into cold storage again because we both had other graphic novels on the go. We had conventions happening. But at the same time, we were also mentoring a very talented student from the Red River Graphic Design Program who was really interested in not only graphic design, but illustration and illustrating kids' books specifically. And so when that mentorship wrapped up and Hannah Tico started doing freelance and started looking for jobs, Greg and I had a meeting where we discussed we need to like do a project with Hannah before she gets picked up because it's going to happen any second now. So we need to like get in there before she's unavailable to do any work.
Yeah, we were like studio fat cats for a minute, leaning back with our cigars and thinking about like, the hot young talent is here. How can we capitalize on them?
We need vampire movies.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So no, what it really was is that Hannah's work is just so effusive, almost is a word I would use, that it just begged for stories to be written for it. And Hannah was so easy to work with and so collaborative and so professional and was a person that when we said, hey, we have this big idea, she put the brakes on and said, let's break it into pieces that we can that I can think about because I don't have a lot of experience with this. Mm-hmm. Which is such a big step, right? As a professional to say, I think I can handle this much, but not this much, right? Imagine I made my hands small together and then really wide together the second time for those of you playing at home.
I realize I'm misremembering this. We actually used the mentorship program as an excuse to get started.
That's right.
Right? She wanted to make books. We have this book that's laying around that we can't do anything with. Start doing some concept art and test pages for Haunted Helpers.
Yeah, and so the agreement was that since you're here on a school placement, you can do the character design work and do this stuff. Your name will be listed in the character design, but it'll just be your school placement, so don't put in a huge amount of effort in this. When you're done, though, we will give you a contract. We'll figure out your page rate or what percentage of the project you'll have. We pitched it as two things, not like do a bunch of free work for us, haha. But we would like to get into a professional relationship. But since you have this other responsibility, can we figure out how to double dip with those two things?
It's kind of like some big comic projects, they'll ask you to do example pages of the comic itself. Like here's three right. pages of script, do those three pages of script, and based off that, we'll work together or yeah. we'll, yeah.
And you're often asked to work on spec a little bit, but you should, if you're a freelancer, be cautious of an arrangement like that that is not very serious.
Yeah, usually on spec it's a big company.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say I've seen much on spec from smaller...
What does on spec mean for those who don't know?
Well, it means that you are doing... it's like speculation.
You'll get
right?
paid later.
I think maybe this is how the page should look. I think maybe this is what it would cost me. I'm not 100% sure. I have to do a page or two to know exactly how long it takes and what the process is. And you have to speculate on whether I'm the right person for
the
job.
Yeah, so you're doing work without getting paid with no guarantee that you're going to get the job yet. Yeah. It's kind of like an audition, really.
It's an audition. It's an audition tape. And that is part of the work sometimes. Now, if you have a big enough portfolio and people are chasing you for what's in your portfolio, you don't often have to do spec pages. They'll simply say, more like this, less like that.
That's why having awesome personal projects is great because then a lot of people want what you've done, what you did for yourself. And
so Hannah is a perfect example of that. Hannah had done a couple of books herself. We knew that it was possible. You know, this wasn't a person that came and we're like, oh, I wonder if we can figure out if they can start and finish a project. It was someone who had a finished project, a few of them actually.
Yeah.
And we said, well, let's just do more of that. So fast forward now to this.
Yeah. All right.
Well, yeah. Late 2019, we were all geared up to the book was pretty much done. And as part of the agreement, we were going to be going on book tour with Hannah. So we were going to be arranging to have her have a bunch of tables at Comic Cons and have Haunted Helpers there. Then we were talking about a Kickstarter.
We started booking 10 or 12 different tables at shows across Canada just before the event.
The event, yeah.
Which then canceled everything.
Damien, look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
But then we started really getting into the Kickstarter, and it's great because you have to do all this like additional kind of marketing material that goes in the Kickstarter. So the book got even more fleshed out with all these things on the side that were needed for the Kickstarter. And that was exciting as well. And we were getting close to pulling the trigger when...
Right close. And then when we got... when I got representation and on Emmy's wish list was a picture book with cryptids in it. Like, it was just by chance. And I didn't know that when we pitched. It just was something that had been on Emmy's wish list for a long time. And so the stars sort of aligned and let's polish this up. And so one of the steps, your agent's job, any agent's job really in any industry, is to try and help you present the best way possible for whatever industry you're going to then perform in. So what Emmy does, and has done with a couple of my manuscripts now, is does an overview of, like, what do I really think about it? What do I think the book market will think about it? What do I think the actual statistical breakdown of earning out on a book like this might be? Who would the publishers be we pitch it to? You know, real nuts and bolts stuff. And then in the manuscript itself, a couple of very specific ways in which it's sort of parsed down. And one of the things I'll say there is that there's always a caveat in any correspondence with an agent. And I've this is not just with my own, but with other people I've spoken to who have agents, that there are sometimes feedback that feels like an attack and you want to get defensive about it.
That's so usually the first reaction. You have to kind of...
And so there's always a caveat, which is, these are just suggestions. I already like the book. So if the book is going to be this book, then we'll fight for this book. But here are some things you should know. Right? So let's do that.
First of all, is there a lot or is it just, does it matter that it's, if it's,
you seem to be scrolling.
Yeah. There's a lot.
I mean, that's good. Detail is good. Yeah. Feedback Detail. Is good, right?
Now
that's
there's
good.
Not a lot of headings, but, Emmy is very thorough.
Good.
So what I'm going to see is how thorough Justin could be. So here are some of the headings, just so you can do a little pre-thinking. Character development, plot/pitch, narrative arc, the pitch or the marketing, cover design, structure, which includes length, first page, very important, world building, references, writing style, grammar, market sensitivity, loose ends, and other questions.
Lost count because you were doing this with your hand, but you actually just did it over and over again. So I don't even know. That didn't help me. Sorry.
For the people playing at home.
Yeah.
He was counting and then he kept doing it and opening his hand again.
It's a public speaking trick where when you're making a list, when you put your when you raise the digits of your hand, it reminds you that you are listing information and you have to pause between.
Yeah.
Each piece of information. It's not an actual account that I was doing. Sorry, Dan.
Sorry, I was paying attention to the wrong thing. But those are all very...
These are important elements.
Yes,
important elements.
Yes. So, and it's what's interesting, sorry to interrupt, but this is a children's book. How many pages is this?
48, maybe, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
We also probably like 34 pages of story, and then we have that great, like, the making of
concept
art.
So, and it just, like, you know, I think that to the layperson like myself would think that there could not possibly be that many elements to a children's story. Like, that's kind of in my brain what I'm thinking of. Wow, we're character development? Are we really, like, worrying about that? So go ahead.
Well, one of the things I'll say about that, which I've thought about a lot, and I've done a lot of... looked at how people smarter than me tackle this problem and this concept of, like, oh, a kid's book is easy,
right.
Therefore. Tell me a joke that will make me laugh.
What did one snowman say to the other snowman?
I don't know.
Do you smell carrots?
Okay. That has structure, right? It has a narrative arc. It has character development. It has all of the things that we're listing here in a very short space.
How does it have character development?
Yeah.
It has carrot character development.
Yeah.
All right.
No, but a snowman is something we all have a shared experience of. We'll break it down, right? A snowman has something we all have a shared experience with. If someone asks you, what's a snowman, do you continue with that joke?
No.
So then everyone has to first understand the setting and the characters.
True, yeah.
What the rules are about those characters. And with cryptids in particular, that would be...
What are cryptids?
Cryptids are like vampires, werewolves, Bigfoots, right? Any of those kinds of things. These urban legend creatures, right? Mm-hmm. People have to know what those rules are, or it would be confusing to a person who doesn't know, right? So we picked sort of the, if you'll excuse the expression, the murderer's row of monsters that were sort of really common. Vampires, everyone has some idea of what a vampire is. Mm-hmm. Ghosts, right? The merman is the weirdest one, but because he's so well designed, you know immediately he's a fish guy, mm-hmm. right?
That's all you need to know.
Right? That's all you need to know. He's a fish guy, and he has the biggest,
Luca
softest
eyes. Luca being a
eyes.
Big blockbuster, even more so.
Yeah,
a
I think
more.
You're going to be okay. Yeah. And we have a third sort of secret character, which is the skeleton, or fourth, I should say.
Yeah, who's kind of like this pile of bones that you're not sure if he's actually sentient or not. He just seems to be...
And
participating.
Yeah, and our dark...
You're not sure if they're just arranging him to, like, you know, like...
our great. Dark take on it is he the ghost's skeleton, like you say? Is he a victim of the vampire?
Is that leftover building
block
from...
someone who died in the house, right?
We don't know. Oh, yeah, yeah, so that's funny, yeah.
We don't know. Mm-hmm. And the kind of thing that, like, if you think about it too long, you forget that this is a kid's book.
Those are always my favorite kids' books, though, that had some kind of, like, dark... Like, is that... Oh, that could be really dark if you... If that's actually
totally.
Why that's...
The Mercer Mayer books.
We
brought those up before. So, back to your point. In order to tell a joke well, all of those things have to work, and the joke can't go on for too long.
Right.
Right? So, comedy is one of the places where I've been looking for how do you tell really short stories. Is looking not at the jokes, but the structure of a joke. And what is required in order for a joke to be funny, first is setting that tone, right? So these are things to consider when you're trying to write a very short, you know, they say brevity is the soul of wit, which basically means make it short and people will get it.
And it'll be funny, maybe.
Right? Might be funny. Might be funny. Build your character. Okay, so what do you think might be said about our book in terms of character development?
That was the one that struck me the most because I was trying to think about the characters. So the characters in the beginning, it's kind of similar to like the original core story. These monsters live alone in a house and it's kind of this haunted looking beat up house. And are they lonely or they're lonely. It's been a while since I read the book as well. So excuse me if I forget.
No, you got it. And in a way, that's one way to test. I mean, for the dear listener who's working on manuscripts and aren't sure what are the parts people will remember, the best way is to put your own manuscript away for a while and see what you remember. How do you characterize the memory of your own work will really... So I think you got it.
Yes, you know. They're lonely and their house is so terrifying looking that like kids run away screaming from it. And so they want to make a more inviting home and make new friends. So they decide to open a B&B, but we had some kind of like funny, scary pun.
Yeah, I forget now.
They weren't like an Airbnb. It was like a scare B&B.
Time to come up with a new pun.
Yeah, new puns. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. I have volumes at home.
And so that like the character, I guess, there's not a whole lot of, they recognize there's a problem. They fix it, but then it still doesn't work because they were fixing a problem they didn't realize. They weren't fixing the right problem.
There you go.
Yeah, they thought they wanted more humans to come by,
so let's
and
use
that
this.
Wasn't
this is a
it.
Wonderful, I just think that's a wonderful way to sum it up. They weren't fixing the right problem. Mm-hmm. So would you agree that any line or beat in the story that gets in the way of displaying that they're not fixing the right problem maybe needs to be addressed? There's not too many, but there's a few beats.
Yeah, you'll notice like with really great, tight movies, almost there's no line of dialogue or no scene that doesn't progress the story forward a little bit. You know, like every scene is really, even if it doesn't make sense to you at the time, there's going to be a callback to that later. It's all really tightly connected.
And we find that meandering novels, meandering works of art don't do that.
Yes.
And there are great works of literature that don't do that. But they're the exception to the rule, not the example you should follow.
But yeah, if you almost think of it as like a big, messy puzzle when you begin and finding ways to connect everything, by the end, it should be a small puzzle that makes sense. And, you know, sometimes stories and books and movies, they have, yeah, that puzzle is still a bit of a mess at the end. It needs to be tightened up.
Great. That's a good summation.
Everything all right, sir?
For pitch / marketing, because this can be pretty broad, I'll give you the specifics. Do you, Justin, think that Haunted Helpers is a book that could be read year-round?
See, well, this brings me into, we often talked about, I hope this book does well because we could make 3 or 4 other books in this.
Yeah, we made that list, man. I have so many.
Like they go on vacation, they go, you know, they do this, they do that. So this one, I think, is pretty specific to Halloween. In my head, it's like a Halloween book. But growing up, we read Halloween books all year round.
Year round, right?
Yeah.
Is that's one of the considerations that they're worried about or concerned, or is that something like, is there?
Oh, I won't share Emmy's answer.
I know. But what I'm trying to say is that is the answer to that, like, if it is it the goal to try and make it something that could be read year round? Is that?
That's going to be a problem for Christmas books too.
So,
right?
Well, it's that's what I'm saying. Like,
no, it's
so many...
a decision
okay.
for marketing. If a book is intended to be for the Halloween crowd, then that's how you market it. That determines when you'd pitch it, when you'd solicit it, how you'd solicit it, at what time you'd want to put it in the calendar for publication so that it is in stores on time. All of that would be a consideration, not a limitation, but a consideration. If it's a book that can be read year-round, then that's less of a consideration.
Nightmare Before Christmas. Is that a Christmas movie or a Halloween
it's
movie?
It's both. It's beautiful in that you watch it at both, so it bookends, right?
Also not directed by Tim Burton, which a lot of people are...
Yeah, he was busy with Batman.
Well, his name's on the top of it, but it's because he came up with the story, not because he made the movie.
He had a
little kid's book. He had a little kid's book.
He's done Batman, right? So it was like Tim Burton's Batman. And then Nightmare Before Christmas came out shortly after?
Yeah, it was shooting at the same time, a year later or something like that. But yeah, I just recently saw that post on
TikTok.
Yeah, there's
a bit of grumbling you know, the people who put in all the work. But is Tim Hurt?
Yeah.
Tim Burton. Again, this is a marketing consideration.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? I'll go see a Tim Burton movie before I'll go see a Who's That movie? Right,
and you don't want to let the marketing dictate the content, right? Like that's the other thing is that
exactly not.
So you know you write the book because you want to write the book because it's a good story, not because.
But now that it exists, it becomes a consideration.
Okay,
right. So just for everybody's general knowledge, and hopefully I'm not telling tales out of school, Emmy ran a report. Agents have access to all kinds of different book lists that, like, civilians don't have access to. I mean, you can find this stuff in a roundabout way on the internet anyway, but here's it in a nice, succinct way. These are the top 10 picture books in this category, in a category that Emmy feels is comparable to our book. So these would be our biggest competitors, which is good to help define who you are, right? So... I Love You to the Moon and Back, The Very Hungry Caterpillar.
Oh, that one.
I Love You Forever.
Oh, I Love You Forever.
How can
still.
We compete with this? What are you talking about?
The Grinny Granny Donkey. Oh, The Places You'll Go.
These are iconic, super old
how I said that? These are the top selling, top 10 selling. Wonky Donkey. The Paper Bag Princess.
Are there 2 donkey books in the top 10?
Is there a secret genre we don't know about?
What?
Wacky Donkeys?
I don't have anything against donkeys, but 2 donkey books?
I just
books?
Don't like hearing you say donkeys. Stop saying it. Love You Forever. Wait, shows up on there twice? Oh, no, that's... Yeah, it shows up twice.
It's that
hardcover in the
paper. Yes, I think so. So consider now that if these are your apex predators in this food chain... How does your book run around in that jungle, right? That's what you want to think about, right? Can it survive in an ecosystem where these are the predators?
Terms because then your influence, like, okay, well, what are they doing that I can steal? Like, what are they doing that they're not doing? Like, what elements of these giants can I try to shove into my story, even if they don't work? Because if I get all those right elements from these big guys in there, maybe mine will be...
I absolutely agree with you if we had had this list before you said, Gregory, look at all of these pages for this idea I had. If this list had been on our minds before we started, we'd have no book.
But so now are we going to try to change the book to be more like these?
No, it's sort of think about it like this. You have all the, you know, it's the square peg round hole analogy, right? But think of it instead as like a football field full of those little beanbag holes, right? You know, that you play at the fair, you toss the beanbag, you try to get it in the hole, right? And every year, 100,000 of those beanbags shoot into the air, and some of them go into holes and some of them stay on the surface, right? Okay. And nobody knows what's going to drop. It's impossible to tell because it's just all going into the same place. But once they drop, right, if you gather them up and you realize, oh, these beanbags are smaller. Oh, these ones were heavier, so they flew farther. Oh, these ones are brightly colored, so people pick them up first. Whatever the case may be, you sort that information. So you have to separate how the information is being sorted for the next firing of those beanbag cannons from the initial creation. You're just making your beanbag however you want it. You're putting whatever in it you want it. This is the one I love. Oh, I love it. I hug it. I love it forever. Putting it in a cannon and I shoot. Oh, it made it through, right? The constituent parts that allowed it to pass to that next level, that people liked it for some reason, that's never up to you. But once they liked it for some reason, if you're going to shoot again, you can look at it. Oh, well, it turns out if I make the beanbag heavier, it'll fly farther. So there's less beanbags in the cluster with it, right? There's less holes over there maybe, but it has less competition. So then the next time you act, you might consider some of those things. For example, our book rhymes. That immediately puts it on the probably not for most publishers. Right? Rhyming books, for a number of reasons, but for one of them that is really easy to understand, difficult to translate. And so the meaning is lost in the translation, and so difficult to have a wide market in other markets, right? So that's changing your beanbag, right? If you are hard-pressed for it to be a rhyming book, if we say, no, absolutely, it has to be the one we submitted, we'll tighten up the rhymes, but it's got to rhyme, we're selecting a certain kind of chance.
I think, yeah, my big disdain for these kinds of conversations, like you're thinking about it the right way. I always think of like that producer coming in on the middle of a movie set and saying like, the really popular movies these days are set in space and they have this, that, and the other. So let's like find a way to get like those into this movie, whether or not like...
The story makes me think of a story of, I believe it was from the first X-Men movie, where somebody on set said about Hugh Jackman and his Wolverine. It's like, does his hair really have to be like that? That's the question, right? And that's, yes, of course his hair has to be like that.
It has to be like that, yeah.
If someone comes in and doesn't understand and just try to chase trends, that's not good either, right? So but that's not what you're trying to do. You're not chasing trends.
No, and this is a report that simply looks at things not as you want them to be, but as they are, right? Here's how the market is. And not how you wish it was, right, but how it is. And here is your book, and here's how it fits into the beanbag cannon, and how far is it going to fly, and how many beanbags are going to land with it near the hole.
It kind of feels like, though, we have like a new video game, and you're saying Tetris is the best-selling video. Like, so
but people own more than one video game, and people own more than one children's book. So I own Love You Forever. I bought it when my kids were very young.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it in years.
That came out in the 80s, didn't it?
Well, I'm sure it did, but I think that's kind of a requirement for every parent. You have to buy a copy of that book. If you don't buy a copy of that book, you're a bad parent. So,
And Friesens and Altona, they are the ones who print it. And they're all like constantly printing it. They're on, it's like they're, you know, the most reruns.
Every time we've been there, it's been on a flat. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Flats and flats of that book.
They have a piece of the factory dedicated to just printing that book.
It's ridiculous.
Nonstop.
Yeah. Yeah, no hyperbole there. Like, it's literally every time I've been there, I've seen that book off the presses.
You said you knew its mother. Where is she now?
I must insist that you do not.
I beg you.
I'll reiterate in the exact wording here. I ran the report for the top-selling juvenile fiction books in Canada over the last year. I've weeded out the top 10 picture books into the list below. Right? So this is how you're parsing it.
And
right?
It's for the last year. It's not for, like, it's not, again, that has nothing to do with when the book was actually published.
Exactly.
So.
Right? So.
We actually did this as well. When we were putting it together, we had a page of comparable titles.
Absolutely.
But they were
we
all
did.
Newer books.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And comps are important when you're pitching. So, okay. So there's a lot more to break down in here, but we only have a few minutes before we lose our excellent producer. So why don't instead, what I really liked about the shape of this conversation is that just these first couple of points got us talking about why it's important to separate the creative process from the process of this is an object for sale, and how important that is to keep those two things separate. I have a lot of practice keeping that separate in my head. My wife thinks finds this compartmentalizing side of me sometimes frightening, where I'm like, oh, well, it just doesn't sell. She's like, but you worked on that for years. I'm like, yeah, but people don't like it, so on to the next thing. She finds that strange, but I have no trouble with that anymore. I used to, if you stub your toe enough times, you avoid the coffee table, right? So if you, however, are a person who cannot separate those two things, that is literally the job of the agent, right? What my agent is doing is not saying, do all these things. It's, I'll think of them all so you don't have to. You tell me which one of them, which one of this list of things best fits your book. We'll build a menu out of that of publishers that would accept this version of your manuscript. And if you say, don't change a word, that agent has already chosen to represent you. You've already selected them to represent you. Their job is to represent that book the way you choose. But their job is also to whisper appropriate information into your ear. If you're in a ship,
make them seem evil.
You know, in not in an evil way, right? This is from Plato's Republic. If you're in a ship, right, and you're heading towards the rocks, right, who do you want to steer the ship? The politician or the navigator, right? This is part of what you're doing here. Do you want the author to steer the ship into the marketing waters? Or do you want someone who does marketing every day to steer the ship through the marketing waters?
Yeah, I think the big challenge there is not to reverse engineer that. Like not start with what's marketable and then try to create a story based on that, right?
100% agree.
Which is what we're pretty good at not doing that.
Yeah, we see other people do that a lot.
Let's make something cool and then worry about how we're going to market it once we've made the thing.
And I think the important sort of last point to make is that whatever you have the energy to do with your book is where you should spend that energy. If you have no energy to do this kind of thinking, don't do it, right? By all means, just worry about whether this word fits with that word in the manuscript in the order that you intended, and the rest will more or less sort itself out. This has been Super Pulp Science. I'm Gregory Kmicek, encouraging you to join the fight, write books, and make comics.